For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.
Hey, podcast listeners. Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/adfreenews. That's amazon.com/adfreenews to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Anton Savage Show. On News Talk.
Nevin Maguire is coming back to the telly with Nevin's Coastal Food Trails, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Nevin.
Good morning, Anton. How are you today?
I am very good. Coastal Food Trails. Let's start with one of the critical things that you can help me with. I've always been of the belief that there is no food that in and of itself is not good. It's all a matter of finding a way to cook it to make it good. The one exception that I suspect in this is periwinkles. Now, you'll be able to tell me I'm wrong, but is there any way to cook a periwinkle to make it consumable by a human?
I don't think so. I've got to cook the next question. That's the, like you're so funny. You always ask the quirkiest question. That's why I love you. I don't think I've ever eaten periwinkles, but I have done a program a few years ago with kind of sea snails. And what they do is down the whole kind of eastern coast, they're all sent to North Korea and they're pickled. And not on this program, by the way, but they're like a little snack. Like, say, we'd eat peanuts or crisps with a drink. They eat these pickled sea snails in Korea, south of North Korea. I don't know which one, probably. But unbelievable, yes.
Yeah, you see, my dad used to, my late father told me a story where he said that when he would be going back to boarding school, he would leave and get on the train with a bucket bag, I don't know how what you held it in, of cold periwinkles and a pin. And he said you could empty a carriage eating them. So I always thought there must be something in it, but I've never managed to make them consumable.
And me neither. That makes two of us, man.
Well, this is a huge relief. While we're at it, what about cod's roe? That's another thing I've never been able to make consumable. Can you do a decent cod's roe?
Well, cod's roe is okay. I mean, like, I've seen it, some chefs kind of crumbing it, like what we call panne, flour egg and breadcrumb, and they kind of pan fry it and you can put in different spices. I've seen it kind of blend it with a butter with some lemon and maybe a little bit of chili to give it a little bit of flavour. I find it a little bit fishy, a little bit oily, a little bit strong. That's personal taste. But some people love it. Like, it's like the cod's liver. It's known as the foie gras of the sea. See the cheeks and the head. And years ago, sure, half the monkfish was thrown out. It was only the tail. But now in Japan, they eat the liver, which is incredible. They eat everything there.
God, I wouldn't have thought. Well, I suppose cod is a big fish, so yeah, there's probably enough in a liver.
Yeah, have I ever seen cod? I've seen monkfish liver, obviously foie gras, but I don't think I've ever seen cod liver, to be truthful with you. Probably the extracted and make the oil. You know, the cod liver oil that my mothers used to give us when we were growing.
Let's head for something a little more delicious. Tell us about the new show. It's all this stuff, but it isn't the periwinkles and liver end of things. Coastal Food Trails, what have you found?
Do you know what? If I was to describe it, I would say showcasing the very best of what Irish has to offer. And what I mean, ingredients, producers, chefs, food trucks. So this week now we're starting in Greystones in County Wicklow and Wexford. And it's really interesting. I suppose when I think about the TV shows, when I started doing the television work of being a chef, the way food has changed in Ireland. For example, there is an amazing kind of French chef who makes the most beautiful crepes in Greystones. He's French. He's from France. Julian's his name. And he shows me how to make a galette, which is like a flat pancake made with buckwheat. And he does different flavours and different savoury sweet. But just to see the way he does it, the skill, like, thank God I hadn't to do it, I'd make a dog's dinner of it. And then just around the corner then, there's a little kind of a food kind of trucks, but there's a wood fire kind of like a pizza bus, a double-decker pizza bus, and it's run by two young lads, and they make the most gorgeous kind of Napolina pizzas. And then up the street, we go to a gorgeous Indian restaurant, Shakra, which does really kind of fine dining, beautiful Indian food. So it just shows you in the space of what, maybe 10, 15 minutes, all the different food experiences you can have. And this is what we're kind of showing in the show, food producers, chefs, places to go. So people think, oh, it's all going to be fish. No, we've done our food coastal, we've done our seafood trails. This is all about really good, wholesome food. Even in the same program this week, we go to a husband and wife, and this is a great story. So they rear their own kind of a sheep, they break them down, they process them, and then they sell them online, so they do, and at some of the markets. So Kilmullen Farm, they're just great people, and they really, really are passionate. And then at the end of it, then we cook with a chef in Marfield House. So we usually have five different items in each programme, and it varies, you know, from we go to Dunmore East the next week, and then we go to Sligo, which is only up the road from me, Clonakilty, and then finish off then in County Clare, which is beautiful.
You get all the hard gigs, Nevin.
I think I have the best job in the world, if I'm being honest with you, because not alone do I get the most delicious food and maybe drinking lights, a little bit of wine or whatever like that, but as a chef, you learn so much, Anton. And you know, it's great to see what is changing and what's happening in the food scene in Ireland. And since I've started cooking, like, God, it's just like a different world, which reassures me. I know business is tough. It's difficult. It's definitely not easy out there, but there's a lot of innovation. There's a lot of excitement out there. So for me, when I go and I see, that's really interesting, that's really different, but there's just something in all these little gems. That's what I love. I love my job. I love that.
Talk to me about learning that kind of stuff, because one of the things, you wear it very lightly, but you obviously spent years doing the, I can do, what is it, a Brunoise and a Julienne and all of those various different techniques. Yeah. And there's the Escoffier approach with the classical French cooking, which is what a lot of Northern European cooking has been. When you look at things like Indian food, when you look at things like Asian food, it's an entirely different language of food based on different building blocks. Do you sort of look at it and think, my life is too short to start again at the base level, or can you read your way into it?
Well, for me as a chef, like, you love to learn and see, and I suppose really, yeah, I'm like a sponge. I love to learn, and I've been cooking from the age of 12. And you're right, the first thing I did when I went to college in Enniskillen was chop vegetables, your mirepoix, your paysanne. They're all different shapes and sizes. Not that the general public needs to know that, but they're nice skills. And that's one of the most important things that people ask me. When it comes to ingredients, like when you go to an Indian restaurant or even a Thai, I love Thai food. I've been to Thailand maybe four or five times. My dream is to do a TV show there. I'd love to do that because I love their culture and I love their food. And whenever I go, Anton, and I do a kind of a cookery course, you know, they'd be saying, oh, you're very good at cooking. I'd never tell them I'm a chef. But I'd say, I love food. I love cooking. But you're there to learn. You're there to just learn more about the ingredients and about the food. So when you look at kind of like Indian food and Thai food and all the kind of variety we have, we went to an amazing kind of restaurant. So we did in, it was in Everett's Inn, and he's an Irish chef who's doing beautiful food in Waterford. And then going to like the Asian kind of restaurants, you know, we went to a Middle Eastern cafe down in Dunmore East, which was gorgeous, or in Tremor, sorry, it was, and the chef done kind of baked eggs, but all his spices, which was really interesting. So that was a masterclass for me. So you're watching, you're learning, you're eating, and you say, wow, they're the stars of the show, not me. They're just showcasing what they do because they're passionate and they care about it.
The other thing, though, that must have changed a lot in relation to that style of the variety of cuisines. When you started, I assume the accessibility of international ingredients was nothing like it is now. I mean, the capacity to get almost anything to make anything, that wasn't the way it was in the 90s.
No, absolutely. And it's changed so much, Anton. And I look, when we opened up our restaurant first, we're open 35 years this year, we struggled. Like, my dad used to go into Sligo to get vanilla pods, Coverture chocolate, star anise, you know, just now you can get so many different varieties. And look at all, in nearly every town now, there's an Asian supermarket where you can get your lovely kind of galangal, your lovely fresh different exotic mushrooms, all your different spices. So it just shows the way the Irish palate has changed. And even like in the restaurant, do I do Thai food? No, but I do a beautiful Thai bisque with a lovely lobster ravioli that we get our lobsters from Mullaghmore, put some pan-fried scallops. So it's putting those little tips and little influences in your food. I'm never going to cook kind of Indian food unless maybe in the cookery school, but you're just giving the people a food journey, a food experience. And I think the Irish palate, Anton, has got very sophisticated over the years, to be honest.
What do you sauce your lobster ravioli with?
Okay, so what we do, we make a bisque from the shells, so that's kind of frying off your, roasting your bones, that's the key. And then you get your mirepoix, your roughly cut vegetables, brandy, white wine, tomato puree, and you make, and I put coconut milk into it, which I love. Some fish stock or mussel stock is excellent, or that could be a good way to use our periwinkles.
No, don't wreck it.
With a little bit of onion, a little bit of leek, and boil them until you get that lovely, with some water and wine, and have a glass yourself, and make that lovely stock. And then I reduce that, and I foam it, so there's no flour, it's a lovely kind of light foamy sauce. Serve a ravioli of lobster with some creamed leeks and a little bit of dried lobster coral, which would be gorgeous.
Oh, stop. It's too much. Now, tell me something. When you look at somebody who claims that they can cook, and if you want to test them and say, right, can you do very fancy, high-end Michelin-star dishes, but can you actually cook? What are the dishes that show that somebody has a bit of talent behind behind a cooker? What do they need to be able to do?
That's a question. So the first thing, like if a chef comes up, you'd ask them, you know, would you do something for the staff, or would you cook, how to cook the perfect egg or poach an egg, do something simple. I'm talking about a chef. But for people like when I cook at home, it's not about Michelin. It's about simple, lovely food. But I cook very simple at home. Whereas when you go out for a restaurant experience, you know, you want them to be able to do something that they can't make at home. That's exactly like when I started cooking, Anton, fancy thing on the menu when my mother was opened up over 35 years ago, half a grapefruit, sherry, brown sugar, a little bit of whiskey under the grill. But there were big things, mixed grill. So food is chicken Maryland. They're all dishes that I started off cooking. So when people come to me, we want to give them a great food experience. And for chefs, like there's so many talented young chefs there that are going to work in London, going to work, you know, in so many great restaurants all over through Europe, even in Australia. They're coming back to Ireland now and they're showcasing what they're doing.
That thing of the the grilled grapefruit, there was a whole load of stuff in the late 70s, early 80s, like grapefruit as a starter, which have kind of become, we have left them by the wayside. But there's some stuff worth digging back up in there. The prawn cocktail with a bit of Mary Rose sauce is a wonderful thing. The Black Forest Gatto was lovely. Fondue, Nevin. What's happened to fondue and can we bring it back?
Well, some countries love fondue. Now, you mentioned something there is the prawn cocktail. I often think of my dad, God rest him. Christmas Eve, we go to Mass, come back whenever that was over. And it was at 12 o'clock, not 9 o'clock, wasn't it? Early Mass. And we come back and Dad would have some defrosted prawns, some Mary Rose sauce, some iceberg salad. That was a big thing. Black Forest, like all these things. Like I brought my team over to London in August. We went to the Ritz. And something I haven't seen for a long time, Gouridon service, which is when they prepare sauces like Crepe Suzette in front of you. And for my chefs and my team to see that, that's a real skill. I remember when I was training to be a chef, Anton, in the college, we had to work front of house. So we had to fillet a sole in front of the customers. That's a real skill in doing that. Not alone cooking it, but it came from the kitchen to fillet it. So that is just something that's been lost a little bit. But they're kind of classic kind of French techniques that they do so well, you know, from filleting a sole to doing your crepe Suzette. We have the most wonderful pigeon dish where they, for six people, this is no joke, deboned a full squab pigeon. They roasted it. They'd done a little salad with the legs, the breast. They made a sauce to order. It was incredible. And little potato souffles on the side, which was, I'd never seen that before. And the chefs just said, wow, this is some experience.
Well, I tell you the one along those lines that I have always wanted to experience, which is fettuccine Alfredo in Alfredo's in Rome, because they have a lad whose job it is to be the mixer. He arrives out and mixes the Alfredo at your table. Oh, it looks good.
I love that.
It looks good. Now, can I ask you, it's none of my business, and I realise that you are successful in all this and you don't need my advice, but I've been thinking a lot about your career, Nevin. And I think if you look at Marco Pierre White decided when he was, I think, 14 and he had his three Michelin stars, he said, you know, this is awful hard work standing behind a hot stove. I could just cash it in, put my name on a load of stuff and spend most of my time somewhere in the tropics not working very hard. It strikes me you could do the same thing. Chain and Evan Maguire somethings and mostly just relax.
That will never happen. I'll tell you why. Because, first of all, where I grew up, that's my home. And I love my business and my mom and dad started. So there's a great family tradition and you have to take pride, obviously, in what you do. We employ 60 staff in Black Lion, which is incredible. And to run a business for 35 years, not alone me, it's my team. My head chef's been with me 22 years. My wife, Amela, we are very lucky. One member of staff have worked for a family for 50 years. Like, that's incredible. So we treat them like family, but I have no desire for that. I love my job. Okay, I do the TV work to books, whatever. I have a great variety, but I'm still in the kitchen 80% of the time. But Carmel runs the kitchen. She's the head chef. She's the boss. You know, she's been with me 22 years. She was one of my students in college. And when you were talking about Marco Pirrawhite, he's a guy I love. I'll tell you why. I met him when I was 21. I went to his restaurant about a month before he got his third Michelin star in Hyde Park. And I remember meeting him first of all, and he said, "Come here, it's your birthday. Come on out to the front of the restaurant. We got a picture." I couldn't get my arm around him. He was like a big rugby player. And my first ever cookbook, my twin brother David got it for me in college in Limerick. And when he was down in college, I wasn't there. And it was Marco Pirrawhite, White Heat. He was the SOS of all kitchens. He was somebody I looked up to and admired. And to meet him, and like I've met him a few times since, I love Marco. He's such a cool guy.
White Heat as well, it has to be said. There was something about, because at the time, if I remember rightly, he was the first UK chef, wasn't he, to get the three Michelin stars?
He was the youngest.
Yeah, he was still in his 20s, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. I mean, like, he lived in Breed. He used to work with Raymond Blanc, and then Gordon Ramsay would have worked with him. He had his two Michelin stars in Harvey's, and then he moved up to the High Park Hotel, and then that's where he started. And listen, well done to him. He's been an amazing success, and yeah, he's known all over the world. But I really like him. He's very articulate, loves fishing, just, I suppose, had enough with the three Michelin stars and just said, "No, I've done it. You know, it's boring chasing it and keeping it. He's chased it, he got it, so fair play to him."
Can I tell you my Marco Pirrawhite story?
Go on, please.
I was on the restaurant, I think because they ran out of celebs. But anyway, I was on the restaurant, and one of the things that I did at the end of it was a passion fruit sorbet with a passion fruit souffle. And at the end of it, the only bit of the meal that Marco criticised was the, because he said that in his view, souffle should always go with ice cream, not with sorbet. And the bit that I didn't want to tell him was that I nicked it out of his book, White Heat. He used to serve it.
I love it. Oh my God, that's right. That was one of the signature dishes.
In Harvey's, yeah. But it shows you how easily you move on from your own stuff, because he literally had obviously no recollection of it.
But it shows how good of a cook you are to do a souffle for, what, 50, 60 guests?
Have you seen the restaurant in heaven? They hand you three of the best chefs in Ireland and try to make it look like you're involved. I mean, they do a good job, but like, seriously, you know. It's...
I know. I love it.
Come here. At the moment, as you look around, who do you think is doing good work internationally? Is there anybody who is the new Noma or the new Fat Duck or the new El Bulli?
Wow. It's a really interesting question. I go to San Sebastian a lot, and there's a restaurant there, Arzak. It's the oldest three-star, and it's so consistent. And it was one, actually, you'd find this really interesting. It was one of the first kitchens I ever worked in, and there was a chef. He never did service. He was known as the creator. I'd never seen that before. So all he did was, in his lab, he had a little lab where he created new dishes. I'd never seen that. But I think that's probably still one of the most interesting places I've eaten. When it comes to the food experience and the whole over experience, if you go to London, the Ritz, honest to God, it blew me away. John Williams, he's one Michelin star. He should have two, in my opinion. But it's like eating in a palace. So, yeah, in Ireland, there's so many good places now to eat. And it's not all about, you know, Michelin star fine dining. But Chapter One is world class. He should have his three stars. He's given his life to food and, you know, Mikel. But his food is just sublime. I went there last November for my 50th birthday. And I have to say, I've been there three or four times. World class. Yeah.
When are they going to give him the nod for the three? Because everybody has been staring, saying, come on, any minute now. And the second shoe has yet to drop.
Yeah, listen, Michelin are a funny thing. We've had them into the restaurant and they'll say, listen, if you simplify your food and maybe don't do as many breads and, you know, we can never get a booking in your restaurant and, you know, you'll get a Michelin star. And I said, listen, no offence, but I have Michelin tires in my car. I'm happy with that. It's not what I do. It's not why we run a business. Michelin is fantastic. There should be more restaurants. And I think where it really makes a difference personally is in cities. You know, it's that place to go for us in the country. We do what we do. We do a lovely job. We do it for our customers. And don't get me wrong, the Michelin, they come and they pay their bill. They're lovely. They're not pretentious, anything like that. But they'll always ask to meet me or Carmel or the chef, whatever, you know. So it's just interesting. Definitely Chapter One should have three stars. Yeah, for sure, I think.
Although I think the thing with Michelin, I remember listening to Raymond Blanc talk about that, and he said that the downside to it is you get two Michelin stars. Now you get an entirely new clientele who come because of the stars. You lose one of those stars, you lose that entire clientele, your regulars are now gone because they got squeezed out, and now you're dead.
It's like a poison chalice, and it's like a double-edged sword. You know, for a chef to say they got their three stars, like, that's the highest accolade within the restaurant world. For me, it's, I flip it on the other side, it's having a full restaurant every night you're open, you know, and be able to run a business. And for me, it's about employing and paying your suppliers and having 60 staff. Like, Anton, that's what cooking and life is all about for me.
To come full circle, back to San Sebastian, they have a little barnacle there that's kind of like a periwinkle, but I think he's tasty.
He is, and it's one of the most dangerous. It's the goose barnacles. And
that's the lad.
And you have to be a really, well, I don't know if you have to be trained, but I think it's when the tide is coming in or out, it's on the side of rocks. I think I might have seen Gordon Ramsay maybe doing it once on one of his shows, but I've eaten it. There's another restaurant in San Sebastian, Martin Briscali. I think I'm pronouncing that wrong, but it's 3 Michelin star. This guy actually, Anton, you'd find it interesting. I think he's about 18 or 19 Michelin stars, because he's a 3-star in Barcelona, and then he's a 2-star in Tenerife, and a couple of 1-stars. This guy, he hasn't a word of English, and when he comes out and meets you after your meal, and it's an amazing meal you have, what he does, he kind of puts his fist up. He doesn't punch you, by the way, because you're obviously paying a lot of money. But that's his signature. It's like, you know, he doesn't shake. It's a photograph with him. And I just think he's a really, really good guy. Has his own TV studio where he does TV in Basque and in Spanish. And I really, really think he's interesting. But that's the first and probably only time I ate the goose barnacles there.
Nevin, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on this morning. That is Nevin Maguire. And if you want to see Nevin's show, RTE1, 8 p.m. September 11th is when it kicks off. Nevin's Coastal Trails.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.